Here, Adjoa Ando continues her reading of Mom and Me and Mom by Maya Angelou. After spending most of her childhood living with her grandmother in Stamps, Arkansas, Maya has finally been reunited with her mother. But whilst her older brother Bailey is delighted with the move to California, Maya is finding it hard to settle.
My brother sat on the bed and asked me, "So, what's wrong? Why are you so unhappy?" There was no reason to lie. "Well, I don't like her. I don't understand why she sent us away." With his usual sharpness, Bailey said, "The only thing to do is ask her." I held back, afraid to face her, but Bailey had never steered me wrong. In a second, he was on his way downstairs. "Mother, Maya and I have a question we must ask. You don't have to answer if you don't want to." She said, "I know that all I really have to do is stay black and die, so what's your question?" "Why did you send us away? And why didn't you come back and get us?" She said, "Sit down, children. Your father and I began to dislike each other almost as soon as we got married. Then both of you were born and we had to think about what we would do with you. We tried for nearly a year, but we realized there was nothing that could keep us together. His mother wrote us and said to send the children to her. When we got the letter, we went out, and for the first time in a year, we had an evening without cursing each other. I missed you, but I knew you were in the best place for you. I would have been a terrible mother. I had no patience. When you were about 2 years old, you asked me for something. I was busy talking, so you hit my hand, and I slapped you off the porch without thinking. It didn't mean I didn't love you. It just meant I wasn't ready to be a mother. I'm explaining to you, not apologizing. We would have all been sorry had I kept you." A few days after our arrival, Vivian Baxter said to me and Bailey, "Please, sit down. I have something to say." Bailey looked at me and winked. He could already mimic this phrase perfectly. She explained that a few years ago, she met a man called Clydell Jackson, and they loved each other, so they married. Clydell was on a business trip but would be returning soon. She said he was a wonderful man, and she knew we'd all get along and love each other. Clydell Jackson turned out to be a wondrous, very pleasant-looking man. His tailor-made three-piece suits made him look like a lawyer or banker. When Bailey and I shook hands with him, he said, "I'm glad to meet you. I'll be happy if you call me Daddy Clydell. I love your mother very much, and I will always take care of the three of you. I want you to learn that you cannot have anything without working for it. The only way you can be taken advantage of is if you think you can get something for nothing." Vivian Baxter gave us both kisses and said, "Now you can go upstairs." On the landing outside my door, Bailey said, "I like him." I said, "I don't know him." Later, Mother called us out of our rooms. She had brought soft drinks up from the downstairs refrigerator. She asked me to fill two glasses with ice and told Bailey to go downstairs and tell Papa Ford that she wanted a drink of whiskey on the rocks and Bailey should bring it to her. Papa Ford was the houseman and cook who lived with us. She told us, "Clydell Jackson is from Texas. He went to the third grade in school. He can read and write just barely, but he is considered one of the best gamblers on the West Coast. Also, he never cheats, and he never allows a cheater in any of his gambling houses. He's a kind man, someone I admire and want around my children. Remember this, your reputation is the most important thing you'll ever have. Not clothes, not money, not the big cars you may drive. If your reputation is good, you can achieve anything you want in the world. I know your grandmother Henderson told you that, and I'm sure as you live here with me and Daddy Clydell, you will learn that we do not lie, and we do not cheat, and we do laugh a lot." at ourselves first, and then at each other. Papa Ford cleans and cooks and sends clothes to the laundry. You will clean your own rooms, and you will respect him. He is a worker, not a slave. I was liking her. Mother invited Daddy Clydell, Papa Ford, Bailey, and I into the dining room. We sat down, puzzled. She said, I have learned that Maya doesn't want to call me mother. She has another name for me. It seems I don't fit her image of a mother. Everyone looked at me disapprovingly. Vivian Baxter continued, she wants to call me Lady, and I like it. She said I'm beautiful and kind, so I resemble a true lady. From now on, y'all free to call me Lady. In fact, I'm going to introduce myself to people as Lady Jackson. Everybody has the right to be called anything he wants, and I want to be called Lady. Bailey jumped up. Then I want to be called Bailey. I hate Junior. I'm not a little boy. Then that's what you'll be called. Clydell, what about you?
I'll go on being Daddy Clydell.
Papa Ford said,
I'll go on being Papa Ford. Haven't said that. Can I call you all to dinner at the kitchen table? It's ready to be called dinner.
We all laughed, and what could have been a stiff session was made light, yet serious. I smiled at Lady. She handled introducing her new name to the family with grace. It was difficult to resist her. I picked up the telephone and said, Hello? Lady said to me, Hi, baby. I'm out on my own recognizance. I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded like a good thing, so I said, I'm glad. She asked to speak to my dad, so I took the phone to him. About 2 months later, I learned what the phrase own recognizance meant. She'd been arrested for gambling and then released without bail. One Sunday morning, a few weeks later, she was arrested again and had to be bailed out of jail. A woman she knew slightly had gone with her to church. Afterwards, they went to a supermarket. Mother picked up what she wanted, and her friend picked up something, paid, and then they sat outside waiting for their car. The woman opened her jacket and showed my mother that she'd stolen a 2-pound can of coffee. My mother said, You're stupid. Take it back. The woman said,
I've stolen it. You can have half if you want.
My mother said, Take it back or I will take care of you. The woman said,
Are you kidding?
My mother hit her, and the police were called, and both women were taken to jail. She didn't telephone me, but rather a man called Boyd Puccinelli, a bail bondsman who was also a friend. When she came home, I said,
I'm sorry you weren't released on your own recognizance.
She said, I don't like to go to jail because it takes up my time. It doesn't frighten me, but I'll be damned if I want to go to jail for stealing a lousy can of coffee. My mother sent Bailey and me to Southern California to get to know our father. By the time I arrived back in San Francisco, I was late for school, but as I was already a semester and a half ahead of myself, my mother said I didn't have to go back until next semester. But if I chose not to, I'd have to get a job. I said,
I want to be a conductorette on a streetcar.
I'd seen women on the streetcars with their little money-changing belts and with bibs on their caps and well-fitted uniforms. I hadn't considered that all the women were white. She said, Then go down and apply for the job. I went to the company office, but no one would even give me an application. I told Mother. She asked me,
Do you know why they wouldn't? Yes, it's because I am a Negro.
But do you still want the job? I said,
Yes.
Well, go get it. You go to the office before the secretaries arrive. When they enter, you go in and sit down. Take one of your big Russian books.
I was reading Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. Now, when they go to lunch, you go to lunch, but you let them leave first. You give yourself a good, quick lunch, go back, and be there before they return.
I did just that.
It was among the most hateful, awful, awkward experiences I can remember. I knew some of the girls from high school, and I'd helped a few of them with their homework. They graduated and got jobs in the office where I was sitting. They would pass me laughing, making faces and pooching out their lips. They whispered terrible words, racial pejoratives. The third day, I wanted to stay home, but I couldn't face Vivian Baxter. I couldn't tell her I wasn't as strong as she thought I was. I stuck it out for 2 weeks, until a man I hadn't seen before invited me into his office. He asked, "Why do you want a job with the railway company?"
"Because I like the uniforms and I like people."
"What experience do you have?"
I had to lie.
"I was a chaufferette for Mrs. Annie Henderson in Stamps, Arkansas."
My grandmother had hardly ever been in a car, let alone had a chauffeur to drive it for her. But I got the job, and the newspaper wrote, "Maya Johnson is the first American Negro to work on the railway." Unfortunately, a man later went down to the newspaper office and said that I wasn't the first black person to work there. He had been working there for 20 years. He'd been passing for white. He was fired. The company explained it was because he had lied on his initial application. I got the job, and a punishing split shift, from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., and then 1 p.m. to 5. My mother said,
"Don't worry about it. I'll take you."
The first day, when my uniform arrived and it fit me well, I felt like a woman. My mother, who had run a bath for me, awakened me and complimented me on my uniform. We got into her car, and she drove to the beach. When I thanked her and said,
"Go home and take care of yourself,"
she said, "I mean to take care of the both of us." For the first time, I saw the pistol on the seat. She said she would follow the car until first light, when she would honk her horn and blow me a kiss, turn away, and drive home. For the months that I worked on the streetcar, my mother's routine never changed. I left the job when it was time to return to school. My mother asked me to have a cup of coffee with her in the kitchen. She said,
"So, you got the job, and I also got the job. You were conductorette, and I was your security every day until dawn. What did you learn from this experience?"
"I learned that you were probably the best protection I will ever have."
She asked, "What did you learn about yourself?"
"I learned I am not afraid to work, and that's about all."
She said, "No, you learned that you have power and determination. I love you and I am proud of you. With those two things, you can go anywhere and everywhere."
Adjoa Ando has been reading Mom and Me and Mom by Maya Angelou. The programme was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions for BBC Radio 4. We'll call you and yours discusses curbing pensioner benefits at midday. 03700 100 400 is the number to call. You can email via the Radio 4 website or text 8484 84844. That's the text number.
From films to books to art to video games, Front Row brings you the best view of modern culture, straight from the mouths of its creators.
This week's highlights include writer Maya Angelou, author of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and a move into opera for David Mitchell, creator of cult novel and film Cloud Atlas.
Their words, their thoughts, their ideas. Front Row, weeknights at 7:15 on BBC Radio 4.
And this is BBC Radio 4, where Woman's Hour is next from Belfast.